listening to Bits of Me.
It's really embarrassing to say this probably shouldn't go in the podcast.
I think we need a pint for that one.
You're listening to Bits of Me, and now the neighbour is practicing the fiddle. Great.
I actually didn't know that abortion was illegal until after I moved here. Like, my partner just kind of mentioned it. I said something about abortion. He was like, well, you know it's illegal here. And I was like, hold up, what? Like, I just had no idea. He's like, well, sure, we didn't even get divorced until 1993. And I was like, what?
I started this podcast in frustration after hearing too many women express how embarrassed, lonely, and let down they felt when they discovered that they were suffering from common health conditions and complications they'd never even heard about. Bits of Me is a space for working through the embarrassment, fighting the loneliness, airing frustrations and anger, and finding community.
You know, that's definitely, that's a couple of bottles of wine kind of a...
This is one space where we can talk and share whatever bits we want without censoring ourselves.
The consultant was quite abrasive and was like, oh, it's probably your fault because you're sexually active. You know, you need to stop having so much sex and maybe that'll stop you being in pain. And it was kind of frustrating because one of my main symptoms is painful sex. So I was like, well, I can't have sex. It was like, well, I'm not a gynecologist, so...
And she was just so matter-of-fact about it. She just opened the file and she just said, well, Kim, I'm sorry to say, you have cancer. And that was it. That was how I was told, on my own, sitting there. And I remember, like, just my mind was just like, because I knew it was coming, but no one can ever prepare you for hearing those words.
Extreme rage and just hopelessness and suicide ideation. Thinking literally that my 4-year-old and my not even 1-year-old would be better if I just left them here and someone found them.
It was like someone was holding a lighter up really close to my skin and like kind of moving it along all the time. I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat, I couldn't stand for longer than a couple of minutes at a time because the nausea became in my abdomen became so bad.
The doctor kept asking me, is that okay? Is that okay? And I was like, I suppose it's okay. Almost expecting him to see the pain I was in and to stop it. But then eventually, you know, I had to say, actually, I can't do this anymore.
Without communicating anything, just like jabbed at my opening of my vagina and said, this is where it is. This is where the tampon is going. I remember this bolt of pain moving through my body.
So we'd probably been out for the night and I got very distressed and I ended up sitting down in front of the traffic on O'Connell Street, which does seem a tad melodramatic now that I think of it. But at the time it seemed like a perfectly normal response to the level of kind of emotional distress I was feeling.
The mesh itself can shrink, it can twist, it can go brittle and hard. So it's almost like your own personal internal knife cutting into your tissues, cutting into your nerves. It can slice into organs. We have women that the mesh is actually sliced clean through their bladder. They've had to have bladder removed and bowels removed. We've had women that have got stoma bags because they've had to have their bowel removed. We have women who the mesh is literally sliced through their vaginal walls and it has cut their partners while having sex.
And that's the thing, nobody, I had not heard of this at all, this kind of postpartum trauma. One, because I think, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about it because they don't want to scare you. But I had no idea of the extent of the recovery.
You can't fucking tell me if I'm pregnant or not. So what am I doing? Here's the conflict in my brain. What am I doing if nobody can tell me if I'm pregnant or not? And yet you're giving me tablets to rupture a membrane of a wanted pregnancy. What in Christ is that about, right?
I feel like there's a lot of pressure on women anyway to be handling everything. And actually, the way that motherhood is in our society is very bizarre and not really the best thing for women. And that it's okay if you need more support or if you're not feeling right.
That advocacy for me is about the fact that every person, no matter your shape or size, how you identify, you know, your gender, your race, all of those things, every single person, every body type is worthy of respect and compassionate care during pregnancy.
It felt like there was like real solidarity and like I was being sort of held by the women I saw in that hospital.
It was on the wall, so when I looked up, like through my my bent legs, having just given birth, because it was made of metal, it was basically like a mirror. So I was like staring, mesmerised at like, what is that? Like red cave, what is that? Jewel red. And then I'm like, oh my God, that's it. That's my torn fanny. What the hell?
I'm not even going to lie. I honestly thought I was going to have the baby in the car. When my husband was stopping at red lights and stuff, I'm like, truck on, will you? Get like, go straight through them. And he's like, I'm going to get a ticket. I'm like, well, would you rather a ticket or a baby in the car?
But it really is embarrassing. Like, I've just took my knickers off and you're asking me to bear down, so I'm probably going to fart. Like, oh my God, like, this is really embarrassing.
She was just a mum and she was like, why didn't you tell me? And now she's really, like, she's no problem. She asks me, she just says, like, how's your herpes? Just, like, in the middle of, like, people around.
Like, well, I'm not an old spinster sitting at home knitting with my 25 cats, nor am I Carrie Bradshaw living the high life in Manhattan having sex with different men every week.
The data, the statistics, the evidence, the social messaging is telling me that getting older is a really, really bad idea. But you're trying to now shame me for wanting to fight against that. That's not fair.
In the 1900s, women lived to the average age of 49 and they went into their menopause at 47. So they probably only on average lived a couple of years. Nowadays, the average age of menopause is 51 and the average life expectancy in Ireland is 84. So we're going to live as females. We're going to be living our lives, so one third to one half of our lives in a postmenopausal state, which means in potentially an oestrogen deficient state.
I think there's just so many layers of these expectations, and particularly when you're a woman with a womb, because your primary role in the world is still seen as being reproductive, that you kind of get this dual, I guess, criticism from society of not only are you single, but you also don't have children, and therefore you're going against your inherent nature somehow.
My womb is not a fireplace. Like, you don't need to just clean it out randomly, you know, every once in a while.
Well, this is the thing, like, to talk about lack of compassion, there was also just kind of cruelty as well. Like, you're not the first woman to have a miscarriage, I was told.
It wasn't that it was particularly bad, like my clothes didn't smell, I managed it fine, but I was horrified that I was in my early 30s and this was happening to me and no one had talked to me about it. I had never had a conversation with a female friend or anyone for that matter about urinary incontinence.
I just felt like disgusted by my body because something was falling out of it and I didn't know what really it was.
I felt like my brain was clear for the first time. I just felt like myself again, and I realised that myself had disappeared within this flurry of thyroid craziness over the last few years. I had lost complete touch with who I was, and my brain was somehow swamped with, I don't know what kind of hormones or antibodies, I don't know, I can't explain it. It feels like they removed a diseased part of me.
I felt like my voice did not matter. I had always felt or had this feeling that my voice didn't matter. I wasn't really that important or worthy. I was pretty insignificant. So I thought, if I just go out and I say this, maybe like two people will respond, you know, maybe, and that'll be that. And then when I started to talk and all these people started to answer, it was kind of like, oh my goodness, like, I'm not alone in this. There's so many other people going out there and going through this. It was kind of like the fear was lifted.
Accepting what's happening and accepting what it brings up for you and doing your very best to advocate for yourself. And if you can't, find someone with a louder voice, a stronger voice, who blushes less.
Like, I think as a society, we have this really unfair view of women as kind of like we're these really hardy creatures with endless stores of resilience and tolerance. And we'll take whatever is thrown at us and we'll, you know, we still are expected to be kind of caring and nurturing and soft and lovely as well on the other side of it and be likeable and nice.
Some of the men's magazines at the time were saying, like, you know, your girlfriend should be on this pill because it'll make her a kind of more chill human being.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, nice.
although we had really had been indoctrinated in primary school not to use tampons, we'd had this sex education, this nurse come in and she had told us that it was healthier for the blood to leave the body or something.
I think a lot of people just think things like, oh, you know, we don't need feminism anymore. Everything's fine. It's all great. And you're like, really, really? I think if coronavirus isn't showing up, the inequalities that exist, particularly for parents and for mothers or those that are caring for the child primarily, I don't know what will.
Bingo.
In the past 6 months, people from 39 different countries have been tuning in to listen to these women's stories. And I'm immensely grateful to everyone who's listened, and additionally so to anyone who's shared an episode, messaged me to say what it means to them, left a review or commented on a post. But most of all, I'm grateful to Sarah, Lynn, Monica, Michelle, Rebecca, Gillian, Jack, Angela, Elizabeth, Grace, Kate, Kath, Sarah, Simone, Sandy, Luce, Emer, Kim, Carly, Loretta, Mary, Catherine, Tracy, and Denise, who have shared bits of themselves and made this podcast what it is. I am Linnea Dunn, I'm your host, and I will end this season of Bits of Me the same way I started it, by quoting Sarah Sproul and wishing you a 2021 of less blushing and more talking. Thanks for listening.